And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where the plan was to talk hilariously awful Game 7s and DEFCON 1 in Milwaukee with the one and only Kevin Arnovitz. But Mr. Kevin Arnovitz, about 5 minutes ago, news dropped from the news gods on Mount Olympus of basketball. Steve freaking Nash, two-time NBA MVP, the point guard of the 7 seconds less Phoenix Suns, will become the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. This is, I think, the first one since Brad Stevens to Boston where, like, the news came, although that came via press release. The Celtics broke that one themselves. Where the news came like an earthquake with absolutely no warning, no rumors, no anything. All the rumors were, oh, Greg Popovich, this and that. Nope, Steve Nash. So Steve Nash has minimal coaching experience. He's consulted for Team Canada. I'm not sure. Again, this just happened. I haven't looked up his exact role with Team Canada. He was a consultant with the Golden State Warriors.
He was like the GM.
He might have been the GM of Team Canada. You're right. And I think clearly relevant in his consultation role with the Golden State Warriors, developed a close relationship with Kevin Durant. And and they worked together in the offseason a lot on various aspects of KD's game. And I interviewed Steve 2 years ago about Kevin. And I wrote a big piece. And the 2018 finals were so anticlimactic that my big finals piece was not about the finals at all. It was about, like, what does Kevin Durant want to be as a basketball player? Like, what is Kevin Durant? You know, Kevin Durant in his entire career has been, I mean, you can argue who was the, quote, best player on the team with the Warriors, not with the Thunder. He was clearly the best player on the Thunder team, but was never the lead ball handler of his team. So I wrote this sort of, like, what is Kevin Durant? And Steve talked to me in depth about their relationship and about how after the Warriors won the first title, he and Kevin would talk about how Kevin did not feel fulfilled by winning that title in the way that he expected, that it did not give him the fulfillment that he expected and all of this. So I think that's obviously a big reason why Steve Nash is now the coach of the Nets. I mean, the Nets have lots of stuff to not figure out. They have two superstars coming back. Caris LeVert kind of had a superstar scoring run, I guess, in the bubble. They got to figure out if he fits with those guys. I mean, this has just happened. What do you think? What's happening?
So one way to look at this is, what is the head coach's role in 2020-21? And to a great extent, especially when you have talent like Durant and Irving, you're in the talent management business. You're in the business of managing relationships, empowering players the right way. Yes, they're X's and O's. And oh, by the way, if there's anybody who's the personification of modern basketball, it's this guy, right? Like everything you and I talk about every single time I'm on can in some ways be traced back to that Suns team. So you're talking about a guy with an enormous basketball IQ and by all accounts, an emotional IQ as well. So that is the case for that is the primary responsibility of the New Jersey Nets. Can you listen to me? Brooklyn Nets head coach.
They're always going to kind of be the New Jersey Nets. As much as they want to excise it, they can't and they shouldn't. It's always part of it. Swamp Dragons forever.
How about like 4 games a year? Remember, like, the Celtics would go to Hartford?
They really don't get me started on their refusal to embrace the Swamp Dragons. Don't do it. Don't get me started, because we're going down a tangent I don't want to get to. Talk about Steve Nash more, please.
Anyway, and that's what I'm saying. His job is to figure out sort of like the holistics of that team. Like, what are we on the floor? How is everybody's function maximized? But more importantly, manage those relationships.
Well, he's walking into an interesting situation next year. The last podcast I did before the pandemic was Kenny Atkinson. I don't remember what the terminology is. They become ever more creative with the terminology that really means fired. So mutually parted ways, mutually agreed to see other people, open marriage. I don't know what they called it, but Kenny Atkinson being out. And the next day, DeAndre Jordan started his first game of the season. Not a coincidence. Those three stars came together. Two of them are actually stars. One of them is DeAndre Jordan. There's a lot of human elements to sort out in Brooklyn is what I'm saying. But they come in next season. I mean, let's no bones about it. Immediate finals pressure, because I mean, look what's happening right now in the playoffs. Milwaukee, we're going to talk about, is down 2-0. Milwaukee, the jury has come back. The verdict is in. Milwaukee's regular season success does not translate to the playoffs to the degree. They're still a very good playoff team. They were an overtime away from going up 3-0 in the conference finals last season. Everyone sort of thinks they collapsed, and they kind of did, but they were very close to not collapsing. But they're not the same team in the playoffs as they are in the regular season. Full stop. It's it. That's it. The jury's back. Miami's good and rising. Boston's good and rising. Toronto is good, and we'll see next year. Like, the window... Look, if Kevin Durant's healthy, if he's 95% of what he was, like, that's... You're in the conversation. Like, there's no time to... there is no time to pussyfoot around with the Nets. They're trying to make the finals next year.
Yeah. I mean, this... It which is interesting because, you know, the analog's going to be Steve Kerr, right? Like Steve Nash, one of life's winners, a guy with both a basketball and emotional IQ, comes into a situation where expectations upon his arrival are immediately elevated. And, you know, if that's the analog, you have to, you know, bet strong on the come.
Do you think Caris LeVert is on the Nets next year? Ooh. That's the biggest question for the offseason to me, in Brooklyn, obviously.
I mean, all right, I answer this in a very unsatisfactory way every time, which is, what can you get for Caris LeVert?
I mean, would you trade Caris LeVert and one good asset, like one lightly protected first round pick, for Drew Holiday?
For Drew Holiday? I don't know. I mean, I'm a Drew Holiday guy. LeVert is younger. He's also a greater injury risk. I mean, that's really what you're talking about when you talk about LeVert.
It's amazing how Drew Holiday's career has changed, where he's the lesser injury risk between right. a 30-year-old Drew Holiday and a 25-year-old rising player like Caris LeVert.
I mean, it's hard to answer this question without seeing the medical. And I know that's a total punt, Zach. I realize that. But to me, that's the variable in LeVert. I know he's a good player. I know he can, you know, I know he can hold down an offense, whether it's in the second unit, whether it is as the second side guy. The question is, how healthy is this guy?
Yeah, everyone wants to nitpick the fit, right? Do Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving really want to play with another guy who, I mean, you saw Caris LeVert in the bubble became like skinny mellow, like ISO, drive, give me the ball. Is that the right fit? And I get conceptually what people are talking about, because those two guys need the ball. But they're also both elite shooters. I mean, they can play off the ball. I mean, Kevin Durant has made a career out of playing off the ball with some of the hoggiest ball handlers in the history of basketball. And as they age, particularly Durant, it's going to be handy for them to be like, you know what, Caris? It's February 10th. We're playing in the Nashville bubble against, you know, wherever, Dallas tonight. We played in the Nashville bubble three times in the last 5 days. You take it tonight. Like, Drew Holiday can't really do that. Drew Holiday is really good. He's a better quote-unquote fit, but he can't really do that. On the other hand, Drew Holiday is a better fit for what those two guys need in terms of he's not a lead ball handler. Jury's out on that too, has been out for years. Or Jury's back on that, has been back for years. Decent off-ball shooter, not great, not as good as you hope, but really good defender.
Right.
And you know, Caris LeVert is almost 26, I think, without looking it up right now. He's not as young as people think. Like, he's a year almost exactly, maybe a little bit less. He's a year younger than Bradley Beal. And it seems like Bradley Beal's been in the league for 14 years. He's a year younger than Bradley Beal.
By the way, that's always a funny game. Do you know who's younger, Nick Nurse or Mike Brown?
Mike Brown?
By like 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
I love the who's older game.
Mike Brown hasn't aged in... Mike Brown is
like 34.
I don't know what's going on with that dude. Maybe it's the suits that he wears, because he's emphatically team suits in this coach's debate between the polos and the suits. But Mike Brown just looked good. Just shout out to Mike Brown, looking good all day. I look like all day long. Mike Brown looks amazing.
Sorry, that was an inversion. I like the who's older.
The Beal one, and Beal's not available, so let's just make that clear. The Beal one is the one you do 10 times out of 10, because he's just a capital S star who does who's just one of the best shooters in the world. And in a lesser ball handling role, he'll just kill it for them. I don't know that they'll be able to get him. So they, you know, maybe a situation where Caris LeVert starts the year on the Nets next year and you figure it out as you go.
Yeah, and I'm generally less concerned about collective ball hoggery when you talk about fitting exactly what you said, because A, like, there are 82 games, presumably. And as you said, there are 10 to 12 nights a year where you can steal a win when your two big guys sit or manage loads or go down to Miami to work out or whatever it is. And LeVert is kind of the quintessential ball creator who can hold down the fort for 2 weeks while Durant, you know, gets well off of whatever nagging injury it is.
And it should be said that Caris LeVert and Kevin Durant have worked out together in the summers, including with Steve Nash, I think, and Caris and Kevin are close. So there's a human dynamic there too. You know, it is interesting because you look at these teams. I think three ball handlers is the point where you're like, the third guy isn't getting to do, when we're all on the floor together, he isn't really getting to do what he's best at. And I think if you look at the splits, Caris LeVert is like weirdly, his pull-up three-point shooting is like better than his catch-and-shoot three-point shooting like year after year, three out of the last 4 years or something. That could be a fluke. And again, I'll have to look that up as we do this because this just happened. So that's the skill set you would want, catch-and-shoots. But, you know, still, you look at teams that are like one ball handler short in the playoffs, like maybe the Bucks. That's not actually fair. The Bucks have a decent amount of ball handling, but like you just can't have enough juice on the floor. When you face the best defenses, you just can't have enough juice on the floor. And like Caris LeVert's got juice. It's going to be the interesting questions for this offseason are Caris LeVert, Drew Holiday, Beal is off the table for now, and the one that's been simmering all year and is finally out in the open is Oladipo. I don't know what you're supposed to do with him, but this is, I mean, I don't even know. I would assume Steve Nash is going to come in and have, I mean, this is a guy who was a decade ahead of his time in Phoenix, played for a pretty, well, you know, in some ways modern, some ways ultra modern team in Golden State, or coach for some ways ultra modern team in Golden State. You would assume he's going to come in and say, we're going to shoot a lot of threes, we're going to run a little bit, we're going to, but you don't know. Golden State also shot a lot of mid-range jumpers with Kevin Durant. Who knows? I don't know what he stands for as a coach.
I mean, look, a team with Durant, you have to throw everything out because a high percentage mid-range shot. Yeah, how many guys traditionally can you say, hey, we can stylize the team around you? Yes, the inclination isn't to take mid-range jumpers, but you shoot them at an alarmingly efficient rate. And so, you know, we can work with that, which essentially just described the 18-19 or 17-18 Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, I poked at Jeff Van Gundy about this once on a podcast. Everyone always uses the Warriors as proof that mid-range jumpers still have like an enormous utility in the playoffs. And actually, I actually do think they do. I think part of James Harden's continued cataclysmic struggles on offense in huge playoff games are because he refuses to shoot mid-range jumpers. So he's either taking step-back threes or he's driving into four people and trying to make impossible passes. But I also am like, if you have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson, like shooting backward over your head might be an efficient shot for your team. Like, it's just like, it's not fair. They're not an analog for anything that has ever happened before.
No, not to get down this road, but like, it's not that the mid-range jumper is inherently a bad shot. It's that inefficient shots are bad shots. If the mid-range jumper is efficient, it's a perfectly acceptable shot.
I can't wait to watch this team. Honestly, I was when they got Kyrie and KD, it's in my first reaction column. I think they fit fine. And there was a lot of people who were like, well, they both need the ball. Are they going to fit? I think they fit fine. You take a 6'3 point guard who can handle and shoot, and a 7-foot Durant who can whatever he wants to do. You put him in a pick and roll. You put one off the ball while the other's in a pick and roll with Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. I assume DeAndre Jordan's just going to play 48 minutes next year. So maybe Jared Allen's not even on the team. That's a joke. I think that's going to fit great. I think that's powerful.
Yeah, like, why don't you just set 41 pin downs for Kevin Durant coming off the left side and have somebody deliver him the ball? I mean, that's kind of the brilliant thing with Durant.
Have to think of, like, as Kevin Durant gets older, Kevin Durant can be Dirk. Like, that's what he can become. Like, if he needs to become, like, more high-volume screen setter, pick-and-pop guy, guess what? That breaks your defense. It's Kevin Durant, just like Dirk did until he was like 40 years old. Anyway, I'm excited about this. Are you excited? I mean, it's interesting. At the very least, it's interesting.
It's interesting.
I don't have a lot else to say about Brooklyn. Buckle up. Brooklyn's getting exciting. Brooklyn is going to be interesting next year. The Knicks, I don't know. But, you know, if we get to go to games in New York next year, I'm excited for Brooklyn games.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Let's talk about the Bucks. Are you ready to talk about the Bucks?
I'm ready to talk about the Bucks.
The Bucks lost. You know what? Before we talk about the Bucks, let me just congratulate the Nuggets and Jazz and the Thunder and Rockets for playing two absolutely hilarious Game 7s in the last 48 hours. Torrey Craig is the luckiest human being in the NBA right now that Mike Conley shot doesn't go in, because he's Bill Buckner. If that shot goes in, he's Bill Buckner, although on a lower scale. It's the first round. It's not the World Series. It's a lower scale.
Like maybe Mark Wohlers. Like I don't know.
Who did Mark Wohlers give up a home run to?
No, I'm a Braves fan, having grown up there, and like that third game of the 96 World Series, they're up 6-0. It was sort of almost a Bucks Raptors situation.
Yankees?
Yeah.
Jerks. Yeah. Yankees are a bunch of jerks. I stand by it. Yeah. I was bitter about anyway, it doesn't matter. And so that happened. I mean, I thought that shot was going in. When Mike Conley put it up, it looked good. I thought it was going in. It was going to be hilarious. And then last night, Rockets Thunder. I rewatched it this morning. From the 1 minute mark of the fourth quarter until the 48 second mark of the fourth quarter, 12 seconds, there were six human beings who fell on the floor in 12 seconds. One of them, actually, it's technically five because Steven Adams fell twice. Here is the, let me just, sometimes you just narrate life. Five people, six falls, 12 okay. seconds. They should just, that should be a new book. That's Jack McCallum's next book. Six falls or more in 12 seconds. PJ Tucker hits a floater to put the Rockets up by one. The Thunder then do a bunch of stuff centered around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander setting screens that doesn't work. Dennis Schroeder misses. I think he just barely hits the front of the rim. PJ Tucker falls over trying to get the rebound. Steven Adams falls over trying to get the loose ball. It goes to Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon dribbles up the floor. Chris Paul flops at half court trying to draw a charge on Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon runs into Steven Adams and flops trying to draw a foul on Steven Adams because Eric Gordon has basically forgotten how to play basketball other than a couple of jump shots in Game 7. Then there's a steal. Steven Adams falls over again. Chris Paul drives. James Harden flops on Chris Paul. I mean, everybody was flopping. This all happened in 12 seconds, and then Chris Paul missed. It was... Someone needs to take those 12 seconds, some internet person, and do something funny with them. I don't know what, but it was just funny. And then the game ends essentially with James Harden blocking Lugans Dort's potential game-winning three-pointer. Lugans Dort had 30 points in Game 7. Like, you can't even... If you had told me yesterday morning, if someone had come up to me and said, I will bet you your life and all of the money in the world that Lugans Dort scores 25 points in Game 7, I would have said, I'll take the bet. I'd be dead. Today, I would be dead with no money.
He led all scores. He led all scores in a game with James Harden. And, I mean, and all the rest of them. A guy who was essentially, certainly not unplayable, but offensively just a huge liability against it for a team that already has offensive liabilities on the floor. And, by the way, it's my favorite story of the playoffs.
Dort.
It's my favorite story of the playoffs. I just love, guys like that are the soul of the NBA. Undrafted rookie. from Montreal, like just defends his ass off, like his life depends on it. I mean, still hasn't touched a screen. Like, that's how good this guy is. Can't shoot for hell. And then comes out in a game seven, is 6 for 12. It's a beautiful story.
He took 21 shots.
He did 21 shots.
I'm looking at the box score now for the Thunder.
Has Giannis taken 21 shots collectively in the two games? Look,
Giannis, I think they might be, if the Bucks got to the finals and they were in game seven and it was close the whole game, I think Giannis might play 38 minutes. Would Bud stretch it out to 40? I don't know how far they're going to stretch it out. So I don't know if he's taking 21 shots, but Lugans Dort did. And for the Thunder to take that series all the way with Gallo, really, who loomed as a critical player in that series, not giving him all that much, that is a hell of an effort by the Thunder. Chris Paul has been amazing all season. And one of the big winners from that series, and a guy I wrote about in 10 Things early in the season, as someone who I really liked and feels the game really well, they've got something in Darius Bazley.
Yeah.
If that jumper, and he started taking step back threes in this series, if that jumper comes along, I don't remember what month I wrote about him in 10 Things, but it his passing and his movement signaled very early on, yeah, the other skills have to catch up, the shooting has to catch up, all that, but like, this guy reads the game and he understands the game at a high level, and he stepped it up in the playoffs and in that series playing some three in the last two games. Like, that guy, they've got something there. And they've tried, you know, they had Sabonis trying to be a power forward, then they traded him. Like, they've been cycling through that position looking for that guy, that sort of four-man who can do a little bit of everything on offense. They may have it now.
Yeah, like the wingy skilled four. A guy who's 6'7", 6'8", can downsize, can upsize. He's got really good instincts. I mean, I think the skills are there. I haven't studied his shot enough to know, you know, what the upside that is there, but that's just a guy they've needed. That sort of, that 3-4 can cover, can check both boxes.
The guy who won that game, you know, Eric Gordon played a better game than I gave him credit for last night. 21 points, 5 of 9 from 3. The guy who won that game for them more than anyone was Covington. 6 of 11 from 3, 3 blocks, 3 steals. I think shot blocking might be Robert Covington's best skill, to be honest. So we'll see them against the Lakers next round. It's a matchup that I was excited about. I'm considerably less excited about it after the last two games of Rockets basketball, but we will see how it goes. Let's move to the Bucks. There's no way to sugarcoat it. DEFCON 1. This is it. You're down 2-0 to the Heat. And you can give me all the, well, it's a bubble. We can't really judge anything based on what happens in a bubble. Like, will Giannis really judge things, you know, based on if we disappoint in this weird environment? We won the last three quarters against Miami. And we can talk about that. That's kind of a bogus thing that I saw last night trending a little bit. They've been outplayed. A team that was the best team in the NBA by the numbers, and I was a little skeptical of those numbers all year, has been outplayed by the Heat, and it's not close. And it's on both ends, and it's 2-0. In a normal postseason, those two games would have been in Milwaukee. They'd be going to Miami now. Now they're on a neutral court. It's just been... Miami has just flat outplayed them. Miami's 6-0 in the playoffs. They're playing outstanding. Their shooting and screening is giving Milwaukee a lot of issues. We can talk about that. Their ability to switch on defense against most of Milwaukee's pet actions is giving Milwaukee a lot of issues. I think there are counters they can go to. And I think Spo came into this series with four or five things he had to prey on, frankly. Four or five Milwaukee tendencies to prey on. And it has taken too long for Milwaukee to adjust to that predatory behavior. I do think Milwaukee will get back in the series. They looked a little more comfortable as last night's game went on, but not that much more comfortable. They needed like a miraculous last 90 seconds to get back in the game. They were down by 10 again in the fourth quarter. Miami really responded strongly. I mean, right now, you'd have to bet on Miami to win the series. Throw the regular season records out the window. I think they're 4-1 now against the Bucks this year. Is that right? Something like that. What are you seeing out there? Let's start. What concerns you most from a Bucks perspective so far?
The Heat have drawn up an assortment of sets and schemes designed specifically to punish the Bucks for their defensive scheme, and the Bucks don't have answers. Like the first possession of the second half last night was everything to me. Like, the Heat run this fake little dribble handoff with Dragic and Bam. You've seen it a million times on the right side. Dragic cuts through because it's a fake. And then on the left side, Crowder gives Robinson this cross stream. Middleton runs under it. And Robinson catches coming to the ball with like 11 feet between him and the next body and drills a three. And then like 2 minutes later, dribble handoff, this time Robinson and Bam. And Butler provides the cross stream to take Middleton out. You know, Robinson has all day and tomorrow because, you know, Middleton has to scamper under and Lopez is not going to leave the paint. And like just time and again, there are these basic actions that are designed specifically to punish the Bucks. And by the way, it's not even Lopez, right? Like Hero and Bam run a pick and roll against Giannis, you know, with Giannis on Bam, you know? So now here's a guy who can both sort of theoretically guard the paint and close out. Does it make sense to drop Giannis to the foul line and leave Hero open with 6 feet of space around him? No, it doesn't make sense. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense.
Can I give you my least favorite Bucks defensive play of the whole game?
Please.
And this is excluding, like, Goran Dragic hits two threes where they go under screens. Like, hello?
Yeah. I've got a laundry list. Let's see. Like, yeah, what's yours?
Well, first of all, let me say this. The two guys who get all the headlines for the Heat are Butler and Bam, and deservedly so. Butler scores 40 in game one. Bam is plus 65 in 205 minutes in the playoffs. They are minus 10 in the minutes that Bam has rested. Bam is now there are a lot of confounding factors there. You know, Bam's backups are uneven, this and that, but like Bam is unbelievable. What have the Heat 6-0 to me, what has raised their level is Dragic finding his all-star form and Crowder becoming a reliable high-volume three-point shooter, which is not going to last, but it doesn't have to last very long. And he's only 35% for the playoffs. He was crazy in the regular season and in the seeding games. The seeding games. That terminology is going to be erased from my brain soon, but the seeding games. Though that has bumped up their ceiling. Like, I remember at the trade deadline, remember, they got to the goal line on Gallinari. And that was my, like, if they get Gallinari, I mean, I wrote half a column about this. If they, my take was, the Heat made themselves better, but not better enough to become title contenders. And Gallinari, because of his shooting, that was the piece. Because I just didn't think they had quite enough shooting at the three and four spots, basically. If Crowder provides that and Dragic is providing more than he did really over the last 2 years at point guard, then you've got a really, really dangerous team. And that's what's happened. But I forgot about my least favorite Bucks possession. Here it is. 7:30 mark of the second quarter. Iguodala and Butler run a pick and roll. The defenders are Giannis and Wes Matthews. It just screams out, switch, 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 switch. Butler's screen just smashes Giannis. They're basically hugging each other, okay? The switch has been given to you. You have hugged yourself into a switch. It's happened organically. Just switch. Giannis jumps off the hug, drops down to corral Iguodala. Butler rolls to the rim for a layup on a pocket pass. It's like, you just switched by accident. And then because you're being doctrinaire again, you don't switch and you give up a layup. They're doing this stuff all the time. Dragic and Duncan Robinson three times in the first quarter run a little pick and roll on the left side of the floor, begging to be switched. Instead of switching, they have Chris Middleton drop on Duncan Robinson like he's freaking, I don't know, a center who can't shoot. It's Duncan Robinson. Just switch. But then you watch them try to switch in other scenarios, and it's like they don't know how to do it. They've never done it before. Giannis is late switching out. I don't even know what to do.
No, there's this cruel little piece, a kind of da-da-da-da-da-da play where, okay, they finally get it, right? Into the first, it's, you know, it's Giannis switches off of Bam onto Dragic. Great, because Giannis can guard anyway. Only problem, Bam slips behind the defense and just gets a dunk on the putback, right? So like, even, you know, I mean, there are these kind of cruel ironies when you watch this team where even when there's an adjustment, it's a whack-a-mole because Miami is so good at execution. They're so good at exploiting, you know, your next decision that they just beat you. And one of these teams is executing on both sides and one of them's not. And like defensively, like Zach, I feel like the Heat can blow up anything. They're just blowing up everything. Here's my favorite moment. Like 5 minutes to go in the game, and like Crowder is making this simple dribble handoff to Middleton impossible. And like Middleton backs out and he's like, all right, I'll just get it from 40 feet away, right? Like further back than we want it, but I'll take it. No, like Crowder's going to continue to deny him. Bledsoe's just looking like, I don't know. So finally, Middleton just throws Crowder to the ground, gets charged for the offensive foul. But like to me, that was everything, right? Like a fairly composed guy in Middleton, just at a certain point, is being denied the most basic feeding of the ball, like something that teams do a thousand times a game without any incident. And Crowder is unwilling to let it happen. And so Middleton just kind of, again, in a pretty crucial possession, I think they're down six at this point with the ball, yet throws Crowder to the ground. Why? Because the Bucks cannot execute a simple handoff.
Well, Milwaukee has turned the ball over on 17% of their 16.7. Let me be precise.
16.7%
of their possessions, and that's too many. And that would be like dead last for the regular season. Two game sample size. I get it, stats nerds. But they're giving away, and some of the like they're just dumbass turnovers. Like Brook Lopez dribble a handoff to Middleton. He just gave it to Jay Crowder, and they got a dunk out. He just like basically handed it off to Jay Crowder. Like
Crowder will take anything from you. I mean,
he thought he was on the Bucks.
He's incredible.
Chris Middleton, God bless Chris Middleton, I love him, threw the worst post entry pass I've seen in the playoffs so far. I think it almost hit the ceiling, and the virtual fans could see it coming. It was so telegraphed in the Heat. They're just dumbass turnovers. But I also think Miami is playing really well. They're switching when they should switch. And Milwaukee's best play still to me is Giannis as a screener in the pick and roll with George Hill or Eric Bledsoe. And if you watch those plays, because those are ways to prey on, like you can't do it. They did a double screen late in the game involving Giannis, Middleton, and Bledsoe, I think. I think Bledsoe was handling the ball. And the three defenders involved were Butler, Bam, and Crowder. You can't, that you're just getting nowhere. They're going to switch everything. You need to involve the other guys or else they're going to switch all that stuff. And when they run that pick and roll with Giannis as the screener and he rolls, the Heat's defense is just on point. They don't have two guys rotating to the middle. They have one and the other guy zoning up. All the rotations back are on the flight of the ball. And if you freeze it, they're helping in the paint early and aggressively. Like Tyler Hero is in the restricted area. Like right as Giannis is basically setting his screen, even if he's guarding a decent shooter. And I'm watching that and I'm thinking, they're betting. We've talked a lot about how Milwaukee seems like a good shooting team, and they're really like a below average shooting team. I also think Miami is betting on their lack of playmaking. Like Milwaukee is not a great Milwaukee's a great like bing, 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 we can string four or five passes together playmaking team. They're not an incredible like pick and roll, cross court to the corner playmaking team. They don't have a guy, even Giannis is not like a great, great playmaker in that sense. And I think Miami is betting on, like, if we're in the paint early, you don't have anybody who's going to make that cross-court pass to hurt us. It's been very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, here's what worries me, into your first point. They didn't get great stuff on last night with Giannis as a screener. Like, they got some okay stuff, but they weren't terribly efficient. Sometimes Miami plays it two-on-two with a switch. Sometimes they're super aggressive. They send a third guy. Like, Derek Jones Jr. made some really nice plays defending that action in the second half. And, you know, when the Heat spice it up defensively, which I love what they do, you know, send a blitz or whatever, like they rotate really well. It's that old Spoelstra everybody on a string thing, which sounds ridiculous until you actually watch it. And he's like, I know exactly what he's talking about. They zone up the backside. And because Milwaukee is so slow to reverse, they aren't making the Heat pay for those rotations. Like, and you said it last week and you just said it again. And it was something I didn't really fully appreciate until you said it. Like, when you really get down to it, reversing the ball to Pat Connaughton is just not an outcome.
No one was going to guard Pat Connaughton in the playoffs. That was obvious. And all you had to do was watch the Heat-Bucks games in a regular season. They weren't guarding Pat Connaughton then.
There are a couple just depressing possessions last night where, like, Hero just lets him go. You know, and eventually, I mean, on one of them, you know, George Hill bailed him out with a corner three. But the problem, the Bucks are so tentative right now. And you can't be tentative against a rotating team because, like, there are opportunities, but you got to friggin' zip that ball. I mean, you got to reverse that ball really quickly. And they're just really tentative. And by the way, like, Giannis Antetokounmpo is a shark. And He needs to keep moving if he's going to acquire oxygen. They've got to figure out a way to get him the ball in motion. Obviously, transition is your number one choice.
Then Miami's taking that away. He'll get two or three a game, but Miami's taking that away.
Right, but fine. Early offense, an early seal, just a something. Coming off an off-ball screen, they got to get him the ball.
Have George Hill, if he's guarded by Tyler Hero or Goran Dragic, set a cross screen for Giannis under the rim as you're coming back on offense and the Heat aren't quite set yet. Just do that 10 times a game.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
But I'll tell you what's an underrated problem in the wake of game two. Kelly Olynyk, 16 minutes, 11 points, plus 7. It just, and I say this as someone who's voted Bud Coach of the Year twice and runner-up this year, it just can't take you a game and a half to realize Eric Spoelstra is specifically sending Kelly Olynyk into the game when Brooke Lopez is in the game, and most of the time Giannis is not, because he knows you're going to have Brooke Lopez guard Kelly Olynyk, and they're going to find ways to exploit that matchup, just like the Magic did with Nick Vucevic, except around Kelly Olynyk, the Miami Heat don't have James Ennis and Gary Clark and Wes Iwundu. They have like a ton of shooting and playmaking, and if you get in rotation trying to take away Kelly Olynyk's threes, which they didn't even do yesterday, they're going to hurt you. And it just, by the third quarter, When those alignments were on the floor again, Bud finally had Brooke Lopez guarding Jay Crowder. It just took too long. It's in my notes, running notes of the game. Why is he not on Andre Iguodala, which was the option in the first quarter and the second quarter? Now, part of the reason he wasn't on Andre Iguodala then is because Kyle Korver was. And if Brooke Lopez is on Andre Iguodala, Kyle Korver has to guard somebody better. This speaks to a larger problem with the Bucks, a larger development with the Bucks, which I've talked about before. They very quietly have become an older team. And that's why this is DEFCON 1 for them. Giannis cannot look around at this team and see that 23-year-old is coming with me. That 24-year-old is coming with me. A young-ish player is now in Indiana, killing it in the playoffs, by the way, Malcolm Brogdon. Chris Middleton's 30. Eric Bledsoe's 30. Brooke Lopez is 30. Like, it's now. Now might extend for a couple more years because 30 isn't 35. You got time with this prime, but it's now. And this is, there's just no way to sugarcoat it. This is DEFCON 1. If they lose this series, circumstances are what they are. The bubble, everything else. It's a disaster. I would be absolutely shocked if a disastrous outcome like this didn't at least enter Giannis's thought process about what comes next for him and his career. I have never talked to him about that. I don't really know where I'm sure he'd like to stay in Milwaukee, all things equal, but all things are not going to be super equal if they just get rolled in the second round of the playoffs after winning the equivalent of 70 games in a regular season again.
Yeah, I mean, again, I talked about the cruel ironies. You're talking about Olynyk. There's this one situation. Again, they finally get it, right? Like, so there is a switch. I don't know if it's voluntary or involuntary. What does Olynyk do? He drags Bledsoe to the post and scores. And they're not – the level of execution between the two teams is remarkable in terms of that chasm. As far as the Giannis stuff, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is one of the most private guys in terms of expressing intentions, future intentions, even present intentions. He's just not a guy who's conveyed anything. But yeah, you're right. Like a second round crap out just has to give anybody pause. I mean, unless it is just your position, this is on me. It is my particular responsibility to do what is necessary to correct this problem. I'm not going to blame it on the organization. You know, I'm going to take it upon myself. And look, if there's one consolation for the Bucks, it's that is a very Giannis-y mindset. You know, I was talking to someone. I did this piece on sort of Doncic and Giannis being the face of the next NBA. Like, they played on that Saturday night during the seeding games, Zach. And it was this matchup. You sort of realize, like, this, hey, if Giannis stays, if the Bucks become the Bucks that they promised to be, we could see these guys meeting 3-4 times in the finals over the next 12 years. And, you know, sort of Giannis is being this private superstar. I mean, something someone close told me to him told me, they're like, I'm like, yeah, Giannis just, it's his nature to be private. He's a little more Duncan-y in his approach to superstardom. And they're like, yeah, that's not really it. And I said, well, what is it? And they're like, he finds it unseemly to preen as the face of a league before you win a championship. It would be unconscionable for him to do that because it's just so not in his nature. The idea that anybody would preen before they win a title. And, you know, that's the one thing the Bucks have going for them is, like, he's insanely hard on himself. And it might not be in his nature to blame an organization for falling short of potential. But who the hell knows, Zach? I don't know.
I don't know. The vibe everybody gets from Giannis, and this is all second, third hand, whatever, yeah, is that he'd probably like to stay. I think he likes Milwaukee. He met his partner in Milwaukee. He has a son now in Milwaukee. I think he likes being the best player on a team and having it, you know, be like it's his team. It's clearly his team. But I think the case for the Bucks all along, and I think they would be honest about this if you asked them about it, the case for them all along has been winning, championships, the ability to win championships. That's the case. When it comes down to the end, that's the case for almost every star player. All the other stuff is nice and loyalty and city and, you know, they've made me feel comfortable and this and that. Even at the end, it's the Bucks were confident we can provide this. We can prove to him this is a place where he can contend for championships for the next 5 years of his career. And implicit in that, I think, was we need to get at least as far as we got last year, if not one step further. Right now, they're in danger of falling one step short of where they were last year. And that's just as good as Miami is playing, as good as the Heat are, that's just not good enough. It's a catastrophe. And I don't even know what they would do. But we're getting ahead of ourselves because I do think they're going to get back in this series.
I do too.
I think they've I don't know if they needed to get something out of their system after the Orlando series. It's going to take them some time to adjust to Miami's a very different kind of team stylistically on offense with the shooting and the screening and Duncan Robinson screening off the ball
in the sense that they have one.
Well, just in the like in a league that's all star pick and roll, Miami does like a lot of different kinds of stuff. They have a lot of interesting personnel. They have interesting personnel defensively. You know, they're going from this is one of this maybe the switchiest big man in the entire league and Bam. I think they'll settle in. I would be very surprised if they didn't get at least one of the next two and make this a 3-1 series going into game five. But it better be game three, because if it's 3-0, then it's over. I mean, you're not coming back from 3-0. But I think the Bucks are going to get back into this series. I think they're going to look at film and see some things they can do differently on both ends. Giannis is going to have a big game at some point. And I think they'll get back into it, but I haven't watched this series and thought, anything that the Heat are doing here is unsustainable. On any, there's no luck. There's no, they're not overperforming expectations really to me.
No, you know, there were a few no fault Dragic maniac makes at the end of the first half, but that was sort of the other thing that would concern me is, you know, as you said, Crowder is probably overperforming, but it's not like there's a ton of found money here for Miami. Like, it's defensive execution, and hey, we see the three things that leave you vulnerable as a defense, and we're going to exploit them. The good news is I think Milwaukee's good at problem solving, and playoff basketball at its most basic is problem solving. Like, they have a lot of problems, but they're an extremely intelligent team. They have to figure out the rotational stuff. Again, it pains me to say it, but I have no idea what Pat Connaughton is giving them.
Who do you have faith in, though, off their bench?
That's the problem, they're not deep. And that's what I always assume. Like, you kind of, even if you follow the league closely, I just had it in my brain memo pad that, oh, Milwaukee has some good depth. You know, they bring this guy. They got the problem is, you know, DiVincenzo is kind of reverted. I don't want to say reverted, but he's not the guy he was, you know, over the winter.
I wonder if these, like, DiVincenzo had a really nice season. Again, 32% from three or whatever he was. Not a great shooter. Connaughton, I love. Connaughton is just, he makes winning plays. Not a great shooter, but he makes winning plays. Those guys play, when they're rolling, they play with such, like, rollicking confidence. They're just flying around, like, getting rebounds out of nowhere, making cuts. You know, Connaughton will get a shot block that gets you out of your seat every once in a while. I wonder if just there's got to be a mental element for some of these guys where they see the other team just leaving them alone and they're missing shots, and it just begins to sap their sort of, like, that sort of oomph that they play with is just sapped out of them. Like, those guys had good seasons. It wasn't wrong of you to look at them and think they're ready to contribute in the playoffs. They have not been. George Hill is the only guy off their bench. I mean, Marvin Williams has been all right. George Hill is the only guy off the bench right now that you, like, I trust that guy. In fact, I want him to be in the closing lineup.
Right. And you can get Korver for 10 to 15 minutes. But, you know, Connaughton, it's funny. He wasn't terrible. I mean, he had some good possessions on Jimmy. But, you know, God, negative 19, minus 19.
And he'll make shots. Like, those guys will make shots. A game is coming when Pat Connaughton goes 3 of 6 from deep and DiVincenzo goes 3 of 7. That's coming. Right.
I don't like the margin between my season ending and continuing being, hey, the night DiVincenzo will eventually hit 3 of 5 from deep.
Well, I have a way to make that not happen for you. Do you want to hear what it is?
Play Giannis 51 minutes?
Well, play Giannis. Someone is going to have to explain it, because I'm sure we've heard theories. I'm sure we've heard explanations, both of us, but for the quick subs and the, you know, the in and out bursts and all of that. I mean, clearly that's just something Giannis prefers for whatever reason. At some point they're going to have to stretch him out. It's the playoffs. Like, at some point you just got to stretch him out. But my other plan was pay the luxury tax and re-sign Malcolm Brogdon, because that dude is good and he was your second best player. I keep saying this. He was your second best player when it was, you know, whatever time against Toronto last year.
Right, because he does two things that nobody else on this team does, which is he can attack the basket and finish, and he can shoot at a high percentage from three. Pretty basic job description. There's really nobody on that team who can do that from the guard position.
You can see one of the reasons Korver is getting minutes, and more minutes than I expected, frankly, and that began in the Orlando series. And you got the sense of they're testing Kyle to see how much he's going to be able to give them, is because Bud has started dabbling in lineups where it's Giannis and four legitimate shooters. Now, part of the reason he started dabbling in that was that Bledsoe sat game one. So that's, you know, Bledsoe is an okay to whatever shooter. I'm talking about Hill, Matthews, Middleton, Giannis, Marvin Williams. That's Giannis and four plus shooters. The only other guy they can throw in there is Korver. And I think Bud senses, I got to maximize the shooting around Giannis, because they're scrunching in off all these dudes who are shaky shooters, and I don't have a lot of choices. Like that lineup I just mentioned without Korver, I think that's a really good lineup. They should maybe play it more, although it's -9 so far in this series, I think, so what the hell do I know? But if Korver is the next answer, Kyle's 36 years old or whatever he is. Like, it's going to be tough sledding for him on defense. And, I mean, Malcolm Brogdon would have fit in those lineups nicely. And this is not second-guessing. As soon as they let him go, everybody was saying this. I've said it a million times. He was their second-best player in the playoffs last year.
Giannis, you know, he played 20 to 21 minutes in the second half. I mean, there were a couple when he got that third foul. You know, in other words, I wonder, in a counterfactual, he doesn't pick up that third foul if we're looking at a 39-minute night.
But this is all the time.
Middleton, by the way, in defense, Middleton had an incredible playoffs last year.
That's true. Against Toronto.
Historically.
Well, I guess when Middleton sees the Celtics uniforms, he becomes Michael Jordan. But against Toronto, he had to guard Kawhi a lot, and that took a lot out of him. But Brogdon also guarded Kawhi a lot. Milwaukee's got to search for some answers, and they are searching for some answers. I think this is a fun series, though. It's spicy. Jimmy Butler is always spicy. And I think, you know, he had a great quote in Sam Amick's Q&A with The Athletic yesterday where he said, "I'm a winner. I haven't won the whole thing." I think he said, "I haven't won it yet," it in italics. "I haven't won it, but you could never describe me as a losing player." I love that because I do think Jimmy Butler is a winner. I think he does all the non-scoring stuff, and the way he blends his scoring in with a broader team concept, like, he's a great cutter, he's a good screener, he'll get other guys involved, he plays in those little in-between moments really well, like little give-and-go moments when the floor is a little chaotic. He's just and obviously defensively he's a stud. And I like the way he put it, because too often it's like you've either won a championship or you're not a winner. Jimmy Butler's a winner. He's a winning player.
And this is Chris Paul, too. And in fact, it was funny.
My God.
I was thinking about these sort of odd similarities between the two. Like, it's like watching Jimmy work his way to the line 41 times in the first game. You know, like he's just – I love that heavy manufacturing. Just, hey, the team we're sustaining a 7-0 run by the other team. I'm going to pick up a shooting foul. I'm just going to do it. I have no real expectation that – you know, the ball's going to go in, but I know where we can find 2 points in the seat cushions right now and stem this run. By the way, can I rant for just a second?
Obviously.
I mean, it's funny. We talked about this game. I didn't talk about the officiating in the last.
Oh, I was going to say, that's what I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to ask you about the calls at the end.
Yeah. I mean, so the calls at the end, notwithstanding, two bad calls that canceled each other out. There's this confluence that I'm finding to be a real problem of a bunch of different things. One, and they're all kind of in their own way legitimate. Like, first of all, the point of emphasis, giving shooters space to land, policing contact more aggressively. These are points of emphasis for the league, and I get it.
We had an incident of Andre Iguodala getting hurt last night.
I mean, this is a real thing, and I get it. Number two, guys are shooting, and closeouts are more necessary than ever when you've got a floor that's spread and guys are helping, whatever. Number three, the review process. Like, I get it. You want to get calls right, and I kind of theoretically support that. I mean, you want to get the call right. Number four is, all of a sudden, I'll beat him to the spot is the primary mode of health defense in this league. I'll just beat him to the spot, which is not a basketball play.
As I said, five people fell over six times in 12 seconds of game seven in the last minute.
Yeah. And kind of related to this is flopping is big back and better and bigger than ever. And so when it all comes down to it, I feel like I watched 6 hours of basketball last night that were sprinkled between 48 hours of adjudication. Like, there are times where I am like, I'm sorry, does anyone want to play frigging basketball for 10 minutes without a pause? When did I turn on the people's court? It is like, I love the NBA. I know I'm critical of some of the product presentation. This is bad for the product. If I brought a casual fan into the room and said, "Hey, fourth quarter, really exciting," and that person proceeded to watch 150 seconds of basketball and 10 minutes of huddling by the way, and I love, like, the game officials in this league are amazing. I just want to say that first and foremost. I watched basketball in Australia last fall. It made me, within 6 minutes, it made me appreciate the quality, professionalism, and just the sharpness of NBA officials. I'm not faulting these people. They are being put in a position to make the rest of us miserable, and it is not their fault. But, like, Zach, it is terrible for the product. that there is no basketball going on. And then when there is, we're talking about adjudication. It's like, when did NBA become a small claims court? Because that's what I feel like I'm watching half the time.
And people who don't have a workaround or whatever, or maybe there was an alternative somewhere, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention, they missed the entire first quarter of Thunder Rockets because the Bucks game takes 9 hours to finish. By the way, I never say, I always say, can we just, to myself, I whisper, can we just play? Why does it take 90 seconds to set up a jump ball? Every time there's arguing over who stands where, this and that, people are jostling. Why does it take a minute and a half? Just throw the ball up. Just a jump ball. Every jump ball is like, I can go to the bathroom and they haven't thrown the freaking ball up yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there are things they can do to improve the product, and that's the number one thing. Anyway, I've said my piece.
You've got a hard out right now. Thank you for coming on to discuss all of this. DEFCON 1 in Milwaukee. Game 3 is a must win. Mr. Kevin Arnovitz, read everything he does, listen to everything he says. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.